Hello, welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please check out the website at eseletc.com, or you can email me at eseletc@gmail.com. On the website, you can find a bunch of materials. Some are general English teaching materials, specifically, I guess, geared towards a more content-based approach. And even more specifically than that, a lot of the materials are aimed at bringing global issues, environmental issues, and activism into language teaching. So there are materials, there are links to other resources, there's a forum, and this week we got our first non-spam registered forum user, so I'm really excited about that. Thanks for joining the forums. This week what I'd like to do, there's a couple different things that I'm planning on doing. I want to talk about my current teaching. Specifically, I want to talk about the final project that I'm asking them to do and some of the problems that I'm having with that. In addition, I'd like to talk about some of the larger difficulties that I'm having with my teaching and some of the ideas that I have for improving that in the coming semester. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago this idea that was kind of percolating in my head about using my own personal life or my own stories about my own life to bring global issues into the classroom. And I didn't really have a concrete example or a concrete idea of what that would be. But during the vacation that I took last week, I got a more concrete idea. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Last week, we had a vacation for May Day. I guess just to quickly recap, I teach at a university in China. My students are English for Tourism majors, and my classes are English conversation. I'm not required to do tourism English specifically. I tried to do a lot of that early on, and I still kind of try to bring in things that are useful for that. But next semester, I think I'm going to kind of abandon that because, well, it doesn't seem to be very engaging for students when we talk about things like making a reservation in a hotel or you know, problems that might come up on a plane or food or holidays, things like that. And at the same time, it's not really engaging for me. As I've mentioned, I really like talking about whatever issues are of the most importance to the lives of my students, and these don't seem to be the types of topics. I chose the topics that I'm covering this term based on, you know, my assumptions about what would be relevant to people that wanted to be tour guides, but I'm gonna change my approach anyways. For their final project, I guess typically at universities here in China, teachers will do a very quick oral exam, really quick, like maybe 3 minutes long, where they will ask students some questions, students will answer the questions, or maybe the students will prepare some short speech, I don't know. To me, that sounded, well, it sounded very difficult logistically because I have so many students. I have about 400 students that I see each week. And it also sounded kind of boring and pretty irrelevant. I don't think that I can get a really good sense of someone's English level from a two-minute interview. And more importantly, I'm less concerned with evaluating my students' English ability than I am with motivating them to improve or to learn English. And I don't think that type of exam would help them to learn much of anything. Instead, also, as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, I like project-based courses. I like spending a lot of time working on something and having some sort of culminating project that students can get a sense of accomplishment from and that we can use to kind of, as a skeleton over which we can drape a lot of other activities and exercises to build up to that project. Instead of doing the exams, after talking to my girlfriend, who's also teaching at a university here in China, although at a different university, and also teaching English conversation, after talking with her, we had the idea of doing role plays, or I guess I should say more skits. In my classes, I gave students the options of doing either a skit or a presentation, doing them with a group. That's the final project. again, it's not a really great way to evaluate students, but I'm not a big, I don't really care about giving them some sort of final exam. That's not important to me. There are other things that I'm trying to do in terms of evaluation to reward the students who are making an effort and not reward or give lower grades to students who aren't making an effort. I talked about that earlier in the podcast about designing a project-based curriculum, so I won't get into how I grade too much here, but anyways, the project that I asked them to do was this sort of group presentation or group skit. This week I collected the skits for the scripts for the skits or the outlines for the presentations. Hasn't gone great. It's gone okay. In my first sophomore class yesterday, I got zero scripts. I don't know what that class is doing. I mean, I look at my grade book, and on the first assignment that we did, this was the first like kind of brainstorming session where I asked them to come up with topic ideas for their final projects. Every group got a C, except for one group got A minuses. And then only one person out of, 40 did the second assignment, and nobody did the third assignment, and nobody did the script. So I told them, don't think that if everyone has the same bad level that I'm going to raise everyone to give mostly A's and B's, because I won't do that. If you don't do any work, I'll give you an F. It doesn't bother me. I don't think of myself as being a particularly hard grader. They're not doing the minimum of effort. I haven't given a lot of homework. Most weeks I'll give a very short homework assignment, one that takes maybe 15 minutes. For example, this week I asked students to write a paragraph about how to make their favorite food. And I just do that because I need some criteria to grade on. We also use that, right? We'll use that. That'll be the first activity that we'll do next week will be them verbally or orally explaining that how to make that food to their partner. And then we'll, talk about food, talk about recipes, talk about cooking, that kind of stuff. So anyways, the first sophomore class, very, very disappointing. My second sophomore class, I got almost every group gave me a script, and they've been pretty good. What I'm doing with the scripts is I'm going through them fixing grammar mistakes, the idea being that way students can practice accurate or correct sentences. I'm not a big believer in grammar correction. I don't think it's a really important thing to do. I don't think it really helps you learn a language, but the students wanted that, and I haven't done it on any of their other homework. Their other homework I just collect to make sure they did it, and then I don't actually return to them. But for this one, I figured, yeah, it's worth it because they're actually going to, use these scripts. They're going to practice and they're going to perform. So it's not like, I'm just giving them a bunch of corrections that they're just going to throw the paper away. So the scripts that I've gotten and corrected have looked pretty good. One thing that I haven't really looked into yet that I need to is whether or not they're plagiarized. Kira's also collecting her scripts this week. She's doing the same projects in her classes. Or not exactly the same, but similar. And she has found an extremely high percentage of plagiarized scripts. I talked to my students about that throughout the process, kept telling them you can take the ideas from somewhere else, but it has to be in your own words. And I really try to drive that point home with my students only because if you plagiarize, you don't learn English. Copying something, writing it over, one time by hand and turning it into the teacher, that's not going to really help you learn English nearly as much as creating or retelling a story in your own words. That's my belief, anyways. I don't care so much about the intellectual property side of plagiarism. So my anti-plagiarism stance is primarily coming from wanting to facilitate, wanting to help them to acquire language. When I was teaching in Hawaii, it was easy. If I read something and it's clearly not written by a language learner, then I just, put some phrase in quotation marks in Google and I can always find whatever it is they plagiarized from. But none of them have jumped out at me. Oh, I shouldn't say that actually. One of the... I collected a script today from my freshman class. And it was funny because I was actually talking to Kira about this last night. There's a paragraph describing this this holiday here in China. It's called the Dragon Boat Festival. And in their English for Tourism textbook, there's a paragraph describing it that talks about how Chu Yuan was this poet who killed himself to protest his fatuous king. And that word fatuous, it's a fine vocabulary word. It's a good, you know, SAT word, I guess, but not an important word for a low-level English speaker to learn. And a really difficult word to understand if it's mispronounced by someone who doesn't have a really extensive English vocabulary. You know, it's not a word that you would expect to hear. But I, when we were talking about holidays over the last couple of weeks in my classes, I heard that word in every class and I didn't get it. And then, you know, halfway through I saw in one of their textbooks, oh, you know, that's how it's described in the textbook and I'm getting it parroted back to me. And so I told them, you know, use the word foolish instead, no big deal. But I, because of that, I was really familiar with that passage in their textbook because I had heard it parroted back to me a lot of different times in the different classes that I teach. And so one group today, their presentation is about Chinese festivals, and immediately I looked at it and, oh, okay, they just copied those passages from their textbook over by hand. And so I collected it and immediately gave it back to them and said, you just copied your textbook. And they kind of looked bashful and looked down. And I walked away, but then I realized after talking with Kira about how common plagiarism was, I wanted to make sure that they really understood why that wasn't okay. So I went back to talk to them and said, you know, if you just copy over your textbook, you're not going to learn anything. And we talked about how you need to practice saying things in your own words because that's how you're going to remember, that's how you're going to really learn the language. Copying things over is really just a waste of your time. And for me to look at it is a waste of my time because this has already been published. This has nothing to do with the whatever grammar mistakes you may or may not be making. And, you know, I asked them if they understood, and they said that they did, and so we just kind of left it at that. But other than that, none of the scripts I've looked at so far have seemed plagiarized. I did get one, though. Let me grab it. This is fantastic. Let me read the beginning of it, and then I'll talk about what I think I'm looking at here. The first, the side is white. The words say before hundreds of years. Cheng Nan, four youths, just handsome. Thesis chapter. Talk about history. All is the wonderful. Pen livings a flower. Ad of a charming, dashing, dissolute, unruly. Don't know the fan pours how much stupid young girl. The person calls the Tang Bohu. Of the jade tree face breeze. Watch Pan Ann. One tree pear the flower press begonia. That to me, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, is someone using Babelfish or some other automated translation service, and they just popped in a Chinese script, hit translate to English, and just copied it down word for word. The whole script is like this. It's fantastic. It's written in a student's notebook. It's all handwritten, and you know, it's like 13 pages. So anyways, I'm not gonna, it's impossible to go through this and fix the grammar because I have no idea what they're trying to say a lot of the time. Well, I guess to be honest, I could probably rewrite the whole thing, but it would be a lot of work and a complete waste of time. So I'm gonna ask them to rewrite the whole thing in words that they understand, and then I'll help them fix the grammar with that. But I'm sure they just used a computer to translate this. But it was entertaining to read. But as I said, some of the stuff this semester, and the final projects haven't been great. A couple students, or a couple groups in each of the classes have kind of gotten into it and done a lot of work. But with a lot of the students, I'm just kind of pulling them through, and they're not really wanting to do anything. There's a different culture here from what I'm used to in terms of academic expectations. Admittedly, I'm not at a prestigious university or anything, but students here don't seem to be held accountable by their teachers. They don't really expect to have to do any work outside of the classroom, and the work that they do doesn't seem to be about did they actually complete the assignment. It seems to be more about did they write something down and hand it in? So let me talk about my ideas for teaching next semester. If anyone has any experience doing this kind of stuff, I would love to hear about it either in the forums or you can email me, because this is just, well, like I said, a couple weeks ago, the idea came to me. Students are always asking me about my life. They want to know about me and my girlfriend. What do we do for fun? They want to know about what's it like in America? How is America different from China? How do I feel being in China? What do I do in my free time? They want to know about my family. They're always seem to be interested in learning about me. And I don't like talking about that in class because I feel like that's not important for them to learn. Who cares, right? And in a way, I feel like it's almost cheap, like a soap opera. Like, yeah, I could do it and they would be happy. But it's like, I don't know, it's like if I just go to class. Well, another thing that I've resisted doing, for example, is going to class with my guitar and just singing songs. Because I know they would like that, but that's not really me doing my job. Part of my job, I guess, is to entertain and to encourage students to like English class. But a much bigger part of my job is to do the things that I think are the best way to learn English. And listening to me talk about myself isn't part of that. I know there's a balance because you gotta kind of lure the students in. And I'm realizing now that I was spoiled by my last job. I could hold pretty high academic standards, even though this was a private language school in Hawaii that I was teaching at. It wasn't part of a real university, or it wasn't an accredited part of the university. But the students were really motivated, and when I gave them challenging assignments, they did them, and they did them because they really wanted to learn English. Students here aren't so motivated, and really, why should they be? They're in the middle of China. The usefulness of English is really kind of a distant thing for them. Of course, they're not as motivated as students who have gone to America to study English, and I need to take that into account, and I need to use what I can to motivate them. And I've been thinking a lot about that. Basically, I've been thinking about how to use aspects of my own life to increase student motivation, to engage them more in the classes, to get more language production from them, and to just try to stimulate them and to bring them into their English class. In addition, I think this will be a way to bring global issues into the language classroom and to maybe get more critical thinking from my students. One idea that I had was, you know, about in terms of cultural issues, to talk about some of the differences between America and China and then ask them to give me advice about them. And I thought that that might be one way to get them to look critically at some of the aspects of their own culture that they might just be taking for granted. But during this last week, my girlfriend and I took a vacation. We were traveling in an area called Shaoxi, which is a small, not small, I guess. It's actually kind of a big natural preserve. If that's what it's called in Chinese, but there's still construction and a little bit of farming and a couple of villages within this area. But it's actually pretty well preserved. The forest, it's famous for having these huge old trees, which the signs on the trees that say they're 1,000 years old are not accurate. I may not be a botanist, but I'm pretty sure 1,000-year-old trees would be bigger than these trees. But the forest is healthy and pretty diverse, so it's a nice place. And we were biking through there. We stayed with farmers a couple of times and just had a nice time in that nature area. And I realized when we were, I don't know exactly when it came to me, but I was taking a lot of pictures there. And I realized, you know, I could put together a slideshow and show that to my students. And for example, we stayed one night in a village, you know, where it's about, I don't know, maybe 40 houses, and every house is a farmer's house, and they grow their own food, and nobody has a car, few people have a television, you know, and it's just a village. So we spent a night there, and then we went to this, the destination, quote unquote, this tourism village called Shaoxi. Originally, it was probably a real village. But now, you know, it's full of souvenir shops. It's not big. It's just like one street. But that street is restaurants and souvenir shops and hotels and a mobile phone store. And there's, you know, all these domestic tourists with their SUVs and all that stuff. And I thought, well, this might be relevant to my students for a couple of reasons. First of all, they want to be tour guides. And I think a lot of Western tourists coming to China will be very disappointed by the tourist destinations here. I haven't been to a lot of tourist spots here, but those that I have been to have always been much less impressive than the non-famous nearby spots. For example, there's a national park that has, you know, all these beautiful mountain peaks, and it is really beautiful, but hiking outside of the park, where you don't have tour buses, you don't have tour groups with their leaders with megaphones, you don't have concrete paths and concrete stairs everywhere, you don't have people selling souvenirs and selling food at the top of mountains, those places are much more enjoyable for hiking. And I realize, and my girlfriend warns me to be careful about this, that my opinions are just my opinion. And every American or Western tourist isn't going to feel that way. But at the same time, I think a lot of the Western tourists who would come to China would feel that way. You're not going to get the same type of Americans coming to China as you would, you know, going to Branson, Missouri or something like that. So I feel like if people are coming to China, one of the biggest motivations is going to be to see this different culture. And if you're just going to a tourism spot where there's, you know, souvenir stands and food vendors and tour buses, you're not seeing that culture. And the reason I was telling my students about this a little bit today, I think if American tourists, if they want to see beautiful nature, they don't come to China, or not many of them do. If they want to visit like really modern cities, they're going to a different country. They're not coming to China. People that are coming to China are coming here to see a different culture, to experience Chinese culture. I think that's a lot of the tourists are coming for that reason. And so what I realized was I could make PowerPoint presentations with pictures from my life, from trips I've taken with my girlfriend, and talk about these issues, talk about, you know, what kind of tourist activities, what kind of recreational activities we like to do. And that would branch into all sorts of cultural and environmental issues because that's part of our life, right? You know, we traveled primarily by bicycle. We stayed in a tent. Because environmental issues are important to us and they're things that are relevant to our daily life. I mean, they're relevant to the food choices we make. We're both vegan. If I talk about our life, you know, they're going to be asking me questions and it will lead kind of naturally into talking about these issues. We have a couple of language classrooms, they're called, where they've got a screen and they've got a computer, and I'm hoping to get my classes scheduled in there. The idea that I'm picturing for these is that I'd have some sort of pre-discussion questions, have a couple pictures, and I'd talk a little bit about the pictures, and have some post-discussion or have some, you know, look at a picture and compare these two places. Those types of discussion activities. In addition to the personal stuff, though, there's some really neat web resources that I'd be able to use if I had access to a computer and a screen. One that I just saw recently it's called Miniature Earth. It's a very short movie with very little reading required that basically gives demographic information about the Earth if the Earth was only 100 people. And there's some really neat stuff about the distribution of wealth in there. I think it could be taken a little bit further. For example, it says like, you know, if you have a refrigerator, a bed, a closet, and a roof over your head, then you're wealthier than 75% of the world. And it talks about how, I don't remember the exact figure. I think it says, you know, this is based on 100 people, that six people have 59% of the wealth. It would be, to me, it would be a little more interesting if they said where those six people lived, right? Because it's probably like two Americans, two Europeans, I don't know, maybe two Asians, something like that. But that's something that you could that I could add to the activity, because there's another activity on the website about world wealth that you could fit those two together, I think, to make a really kind of nice activity. But I like the idea, as I've mentioned before, I'm not using handouts this semester, which is good. I like the fact that I'm not making tons of copies, but having a screen and being able to use PowerPoint, or I keep saying PowerPoint, I actually don't use Microsoft. I use OpenOffice, and they have their presentation software called Impress. And using those, I think, using a presentation would be a really good way to engage the students, and I think I would be more successful at keeping them interested than I have been. I should also say, it's really important to me in bringing these types of issues and ideas into classes, I don't want to force my ideas on anyone. I don't want to, stand up. And that's another reason why I don't like lecturing. I don't want to stand up and tell students, this is what's important and this is what you should think about it. I tried earlier in this semester to get them to tell me what issues they wanted to talk about, and that fell really flat. But setting it up where I'm talking about just kind of my life and they're asking questions, I think they'll be able to kind of steer the class to go where they want it to go. And if they, aren't asking about the global issue stuff, if they aren't asking me, why do you travel by bicycle? Why don't you eat meat? Those kind of questions, then I won't bring it up. But if they do ask me, and I think that there's a fairly good chance that they would ask me because they're curious about that kind of thing, then that gives us a way to talk about these issues in a way that's going to be more personally relevant than it might otherwise be. And again, the idea of doing it based on a trip seems especially appropriate because my students are tourism majors, and they're going to be leading trips to these places, and they might be kind of surprised. I'm taking Americans to all of these places that are popular with domestic tourists. Why don't they like them? And they might not get it. And I think that it might be helpful to them to think about other options, other ways of leading a trip, other types of traveling and of tourism that might actually be pretty popular with a lot of Western tourists, and maybe even domestic tourists if they tried it. I don't know. I certainly don't claim to be an expert on Chinese culture, and I don't know if, staying with a farmer in a traditional village has any appeal to a Chinese tourist. I want to kind of restate what I'm talking about here, because a lot of these ideas are new to me, and I feel like I might not be expressing them really clearly or articulately, but I'm hoping that by basing lessons around these kind of personal activities, that it will help to motivate students, help to engage them more in the discussions that we do, in if we do some writing activities and those kinds of things, to get them to both process more English in their listening and to produce more English in their speaking and in their writing. So my primary reason for wanting to do this is motivating students. In addition, I think that it could kind of be a good stepping stone into some global issues. If that doesn't present itself, like I said, I'm not interested in forcing the class to be about those issues. But I do think that it raises the possibility that those might, fit in and to bring in, even if we don't talk about broader global issues, we will be able to look more critically at a lot of tourism and travel issues, which are certainly relevant to what my students are doing. Ideally, I would have liked to have these personal stories coming from my students, and I will certainly encourage them to bring in their own experiences, to tell their own stories, but I've tried to do that a lot this semester, and I haven't really gotten a lot of student involvement. In each class, I'll get four or five students that are always willing to share their stories, share their experience, share their opinions, and the rest are just kind of passively taking it in. So I'm hoping that by giving them some examples of the types of personal stories and maybe kind of triggering some ideas and memories and opinions in them, that they'll be willing to share more of themselves. And ideally, I would maybe talk about myself the first couple weeks and then have it be more about them for the remainder of the class. I don't want to have a very teacher-centered class where I'm lecturing and teaching them about my experience and my opinion. That's certainly not my goal here. But I'm hoping that starting from there will be a good motivation and can lead us to some of the more student-centered activities that I've done in the past. Eventually, and I'm not sure when, but I'd like to put together a short, you know, maybe 5 to 10 slide PowerPoint illustrating the type of thing that I have in mind. And once I do that, I'll put it up on the website and mention it again in the podcast so you can check it out. But I would love to hear any suggestions or ideas from other teachers who have done the same kind of connecting, because as I've in previous classes, I think I've done a pretty good job of connecting issues to students' lives. But here, because my students have so little experience doing critical thinking and looking at their own lives that way, those types of activities have really fallen flat. I'm interested to know if anyone's tried this kind of thing before, because it seems, I don't know, I've been kind of frustrated with teaching here, and I'm kind of excited now, because I think that there seems to be some potential for this as a way of me finding a way to engage my students in things that I feel that are more worthwhile and more helpful to them to learn English than going through, you know, the dialogues in this mediocre textbook that we're using. Please feel free to come by the website. You can ask questions via email at eseletc@gmail.com or come to the website at eseletc.com. Visit the forums. You can be legitimate member number 4 if you're fast. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.